Engagement with the Dharmapada, an invitation and introduction by James Lowe. With his approval, I've written the following few sentences, ending with a request. All the rest is from his book, Finding Freedom. This audio recording is formed from the introductions to the Dharmapada, written by James Lowe in his book Finding Freedom. Together with the commentary, they form the majority of the first section of the book. The other two sections are of Mahayana and Dzogchen teachings. In the book, James gives an explanation of these views, their methods, and the result of engagement with these different aspects of Buddhist teachings, and how they can facilitate our journey to the realization of freedom. Each section is based around a text or texts which are like precious gems. The brilliance of each gemstone will be revealed in the light of our engagement with it. Its potential to shine for us has been enhanced by the way in which it has been cut and polished, and also by its setting. In this first section, the Dharmapada is the gem. The commentary, the cutting and polishing, and the introduction, which forms the setting, help us to appreciate its value. The audio recording of the translation of the Dharmapada and commentary from the book is already in circulation. So if you have shared the link to the Dharmapada and commentary, please would you also share the link to this recording so that the text and its setting are brought together. The following passage is an extract from the general introduction in the book Finding Freedom. The root of suffering is alienation from our source, and this suffering is maintained by non-attention to how our mind actually is. The fact of this non-attention is obscured by our ongoing activity of imagining how we are in ways that conceal rather than reveal what is simply present. When we do not awaken to our own mind as it is, but rely on beliefs that we have inherited from our families and cultures, we continue in the delusions these beliefs generate. If we can catch a glimpse of how erroneous our common beliefs are, then two paths open up. The first indicates there is a lot to be done, and therefore we should strive. The second indicates that we suffer due to succumbing to the illusion of lacking the direct non-dual presence of our own awareness, and therefore we should relax. When we seem to only have concepts to rely on in order to work out how we are, we can either avoid the issue altogether, which leaves us in delusion, or we can seek information. However, the accumulation of such information, presented as knowledge, offers us only concepts about our idea of our mind. This indirect, mediated relationship generates cover-up rather than revelation. In daily life, the mind itself seems invisible and somewhat irrelevant, and so is easily taken for granted. We have a mind. Of course we do. That is that. For most of us, most of the time, our concern is more with our personality and our experience of ourselves as we change and develop with the world around us. What is happening for me, to me, as me, seems to be who I am. And since these happenings are ever-changing, there is always something new to identify with, reflect on, or respond to. From the Buddhist point of view, this way of experiencing life is unlikely to generate much happiness, since it is inseparable from our sense that our personal identity is not as stable as we would like it to be. Insecurity, anxiety, and uncertainty feed both our sense of alienation and our longing for a reliable sense of belonging. The Buddha's teaching points the way to a different sense of oneself, one that is less dependent on happenstance and reactivity. The Buddha's illuminating insight is liberating if it is lived, It provides a path to liberation if understood and aligned with. But someone hearing his teaching for the first time may find it radical and shocking. We all have good days and bad, yet if we are lucky, then life seems basically okay. However, the Buddha indicates that we feel this because, at the moment, we have a comfortable cell in the prison of samsara. Causal factors lead us to be born in different realms with different kinds of bodies and different abilities and qualities. As specific causal factors are exhausted, new ones arise through which we find ourselves in a new form with no recollection of what went before. When we see our existence in terms of transience and limitation, then the ideas of liberation, freedom, and enlightenment become much more meaningful. Buddhism is not an add-on to the life we have, but offers an awakening to a new vision of our potential. This book has three sections, each addressing the question of what our mind is and how it functions. The Buddha taught many different views or reorientations to help us loosen up from our habitual fixations. He was very aware of the rich diversity of beliefs and temperaments that sentient beings manifest through variations in interest in and access to their environment, levels of volatility and impulsivity, degrees of finesse in embodied motility, and so on. To simply present one truth and hope that everyone would find it meaningful was not the Buddha's way. Uniting wisdom and compassion, he revealed many thousands of pathways towards calmness and clarity, relaxation and creativity, profundity and connectivity. A short book like this can only touch on some key themes. However, if we let them, they can act as a mirror, allowing us to see more clearly who and how we actually are, free of the disguising identities we habitually adopt. The first section, Fight the Good Fight, contains a key text belonging to the Theravadan tradition of Buddhism. Here, the mind as we ordinarily experience it is understood as a tendency to believe in the inherent existence or individual reality of ourselves and all other sentient beings, holding on to the idea that I am someone and you are someone else. I have to work out if I like you, as I take you to be, or do not like you. Our mind, seemingly organized by and around our ego self, is concerned with winning and losing, with getting more of the pleasant and less of the unpleasant. This entails a Sisyphus-like effort, since all situations, as complex compounded events, are unstable and impermanent, and therefore have to be repaired and recreated again and again. Sometimes impulses arise in us which undermine all that we have established, and sometimes it is outer events which hurl us into unpredictable states of becoming. The text presented in this first section is the Dharmapada, which sets out clearly the importance of ethics as the necessary frame of reference if we wish our experience to be fulfilling. Negative actions lead to negative consequences, and positive actions lead to positive consequences. This may seem oversimplistic and even naive, but such a sense of the determinism inherent in the unfolding of cause and effect provides a perspective, a distance from enmeshment, that allows us to review our intentions in the light of both their short and long-term outcomes. Activity of body, voice, and mind generates its own outcomes and consequences. No other, no God or devil is rewarding or punishing us. It is the logic of intention and enactment that drives the multiplicity of possible resultant experiences. Who am I in this situation? What am I up to? How do I think about you? Who do I take you to be? Who do you seem to take yourself to be? If we are able to pose such questions so that they let us see our habitual identifications in a new way, then more options become available. We gain a meta vision that offers some protection against the vexations, provocations, and seductions of the engulfing moment. The Buddha pointed out that suffering, limitation, disappointment, and so on arise from causes. And if these causes are no longer activated, then suffering will end. The two key causes of suffering are, firstly, ignoring the actuality, the how-it-isness of each situation, and secondly, imagining that our interpretation is the simple truth. Believing what we imagine, our assumptions seem self-valid, while our ego self's craving for something real to hang on to is pacified by being fed intense illusions. Our minds are busy. In order to slow them down, we need to cut back on our aroused involvement, since desire and aversion distort and obscure the actual situation. The main Theravadan methods for such slowing are meditation to develop undistracted focus, ethical restraint of impulses and increased attention to others as other, and engagement in analysis of our assumptions and beliefs so that we can see the deluding quality of our comforting complacency. As long as my mind seems to be simply its current content of thoughts, feelings, memories, sensations, and so on, there is little reflective space. Therefore, these three methods of slowing are mobilized together to illuminate the possibility of letting go, of disengaging, so that new options are revealed, along with a new sense of the one who may choose or not. This leads to calmness and clarity, and to a fresh, mindful ease that is no longer driven by unconsidered mental events.